I'm on OKCupid, and this guy messaged me. I'm 54, and he goes, 54? Wow, you look 50. Wow, slow down, sir. Let me take a second and accept this amazing compliment. That I look 4 years younger. Thank you. You look like you'll never be naked in my garage. He was, but that's not the point of that joke.
That's Lori Kilmartin. She recently spent 10 years as an Emmy-nominated writer for Conan O'Brien. But Lori is a stand-up comedy veteran. She started making people laugh in the 1980s, and 40 years later, she's still going strong. But you don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to her latest album, Corset. Lori has funny takes on single motherhood, dating, and dealing with a live-in mom. She also has an uncanny knack for striking up funny conversations with members of the audience. We caught up with Lori from her California home to talk about the special, the tragic loss of her mother before its release, and why she called it Corset.
Well, I recorded it in 2019, and at that time, my mother was living with me, and I'm also a single mom, and my son was, I guess he was 12, but, you know, the ages 0 to 12 really suck the life out of you, and I felt like between the two of them, I was being suffocated, much like if I was wearing a corset that had been tied too tight.
So, yeah, and the cover features a photo of you wearing a corset and you're in this body of water. And it turns out that former Beta guest Cristela Alonso helped you with this. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I just thought a corset looked cool. I thought I liked the name. I liked the metaphor and all that stuff. And so I just posted a picture of the one I bought on Amazon on Twitter. And I didn't realize it would be difficult to get into. And then Cristela DM'd me and was like, I used to do that for a living. And I'm like, wait, that's a job? Putting a corset on people? Oh, my God. So she was open the day I was getting my pictures taken, and she came over. And it turned out to be like a 6-hour day. And she got me into it, and she had to get me out of it. If she hadn't chimed in and just offered, I don't know what we would have done. I probably would have just been wearing a t-shirt, and it would have a totally different vibe.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, a corset, you cannot put on a corset yourself. And that made me think that perhaps a corset could be thought of as kind of a straitjacket. Do you see a connection
exactly.
there?
Exactly. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Believe me. Being bookended by those two, my young son and my old mother, definitely felt like I was in a straitjacket.
Whenever I do have a boyfriend, I never introduce my son to him as a boyfriend. I always say, oh, honey, this is your uncle. And then when I break up with a guy, I tell my son, oh, honey, your uncle died. Yeah, it's tough because once I had a really good month on OKCupid, which means, of course, my son had the worst month of his entire life. Yeah, he lost 11 uncles. And 2 aunts. Yeah. And a grandpa. But that guy actually died.
I'm always curious about what a loved one thinks of a comedian's material about them. What does your son think of your comedy?
He doesn't, as far as I know, he doesn't listen to too much of it. Like pre-pandemic or pre-Omicron, because he's vaxxed. He would come to me with clubs, to clubs, but it was clubs that had cheeseburgers. Like that was his number one priority. Priority for a comedy club is that to have a cheeseburger. So I'm not sure that he listened too much. I think he might be partially aware of my material, but not really. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, he's sort of grown up with it, so he's used to it.
Yeah, well, he's missing out.
Well, you know, there's some stuff. Since I'm chronicling his life in real time, you know, there's some stuff he can hear later when he's an adult that he doesn't need to hear at the same time he's living it. Especially when I'm talking about his grades and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I try to be more positive at home. I'm definitely more negative on stage, and so I wouldn't want him to think I actually feel that way.
My kid, when he was in kindergarten, they had homework in kindergarten. 2 pages a night, and then you turn in a packet of 8 pages on Friday, and it was to teach the kids that life was a series of meaningless chores. And they should have killed themselves in preschool. Okay. So 1 week, I didn't do it with him at all. I just blew it off. I was not having it. And then Thursday night comes, and I was like, oh, God, I either have to do 8 pages with him now, or I could put him to bed, drink a bottle of wine, put the pencil in my non-dominant hand. Right, exactly, like a 5-year-old.
You do some great crowd work throughout Corset. So I'm wondering, when you're recording a comedy album, do you invite these opportunities or avoid them?
I always invite those opportunities. It just, to me, it makes the show really unique. And if I can call back any sort of crowd work in a joke, it just makes it a unique experience. I always like to wrestle with the crowd a little bit. Yeah, so I invited.
So who's my single parent back there?
That's me.
That's you. Hi, you.
Hi.
What's your name?
Jamie.
Jamie. And how many kids do you have?
One.
You have one. How old?
Six.
I'm glad you're out.
Yes.
Right? Do you date very much?
Yes.
Well, that's good to know. Are you on a date tonight?
Yes.
I like how bold you are in saying that you date a lot in front of a date. That's why you're my queen.
As a fellow dog lover, I have to ask you about your dog intervention with your audience. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I'm in California, right? And so we have fire season like 11 months of the year. And every year, there's a story about somebody who dies because they go back into their fiery house trying to rescue their dog. And so I just started doing a bit where I talk to the audience. I talk to someone who swears they would do that, and I try to talk them out of it. And one of the tenets is that your dog is replaceable, which everyone chafes at. But my proof is that my dad had 5 black labs over the course of his lifetime named Pepsi.
5. When a Pepsi would die, my dad would go right to the pound and get a new Pepsi. He'd take the collar off the dead Pepsi. What are you moaning for? Collars cost money. And the information on the tags stays the same. Why do you want to waste my dad's money? Sometimes he wouldn't remember which Pepsi he was on. He forgot Pepsi 4 died once he thought Pepsi 5 lived 26 years.
We didn't think it was weird. Like, we just, I guess for us, when you have a black lab, you got to name it Pepsi.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know what people, I don't know why they don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I was a kid, we had 2 dogs in a row named Perky, so. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, you get the sense of continuity, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. We had you on Beta once before after your father passed and after you wrote the touching and hilarious Dead People Suck. In Corset, you have a short bit about your mom moving in with you. Not long after this was recorded, your mother passed of COVID. Did you have any second thoughts about including this bit on the album?
Oh, no. I was relieved that I recorded the album while she was still alive. Because obviously I can't do that material when she's dead. I wouldn't have been able to fake that she was alive, you know.
I'm very stressed out, though. My living situation is stressful. I know why I have an aneurysm. My mother, my 81-year-old mother, moved in with me. It's temporary because she's 81. She wears a DNR bracelet, a do not resuscitate bracelet. I put it on her. She can't get it off. I hear her trying at night. Chewing on it. Good luck, Mom. Dentures don't cut.
And I have a whole new chunk of material about her dying of COVID, which causes some consternation sometimes in front of some crowds, but I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your final call with your mom?
So she died in June of 2020, and she died in California. And there happened to have been like a bit of a lull. So the hospital she was in left the iPad that was connected to our iPad, you know, like the one in her hospital room. They just left it on. So we had it on for like, I don't know, almost 3 straight days. So my sister and I, we slept in my room and, you know, we'd say goodnight to our mom and on the iPad and wake up. And there she was, definitely unconscious. I don't know how much she could hear us. But we just pretended like she could, and we talked to her, and we'd take the iPad around the house and just, you know, say what we were doing and all that kind of stuff. So that was the last call. It was 3 days long.
Yeah, 70 hours, I've read. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty long. And, you know, the morning she passed, I was just watching her, and I noticed that her breaths were coming farther and farther apart, which is exactly what happened with my dad. My dad had died of cancer, and I was at his side when he stopped breathing. And it was one of those things where you're like, they take a breath, and then you're just instinctively waiting for the next one, and they don't take one, and then they take it, right? So the amount of seconds between each inhale, it gets longer and longer. And so that was happening to her. So then my sister and I just sort of perched ourselves right by the iPad in my kitchen and kind of watched, you know, until she didn't take a new breath. And then we're like, oh, okay, it happened. And after we finished reacting, I'm sure the hospital knew they were all hooked up, but we called them to let them know that she was gone.
Yeah. Your father had told you that he wanted to be cremated and have his mm-hmm. ashes sprinkled in Ireland. So you and your son went there to do that. How did that go?
Well, it was a lot of fun. It was fun to go to Ireland. My dad had never gone. My dad was one of those Irish Americans that loved Ireland and never went. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you should have. I mean, and every old man in Ireland looked exactly like my dad. It was really jarring. But that was nice to see too. I had gotten really into ancestry after my dad died. I wish I'd gotten into it when he was alive, because he really would have enjoyed all the stuff I found out about his family. But oh well, you know, it was sort of an effort to connect with him, to look into ancestry and his ancestors. And ended up finding the stone ruin, like a little two-story house, very tiny house, that his great-grandmother was born in and had left during the early part of the famine with the whole family. They came to Albany, New York. And so we went there, my son and I, and that's where we sprinkled his ashes. Of course, it was in someone's private property, so we had to sneak onto it.
Well, as soon as we climbed over the fence, cows emerged from the grass. And they started walking over to us, right? And they looked very curious, like security cows. And then I realized, oh my God, they're not all cows. Some of them were bulls. And they're headed for us as well. And so my son and I went right back over the fence. And the bulls and the cows came right up to the very edge. One of the bulls mounted a cow while looking me directly in the eyes. And that's where we left my dad's ashes. A different way for the Kilmartin family to come full circle.
We actually got him on the stone ruin. I don't say we do in the album, but we did get him there.
Oh, great. That's good to know. Any plans to return to Ireland with your mom's ashes, or perhaps the ashes of all of your son's dead uncles?
You know, why not just deposit all of my family's remains in another country? I'm sure they wouldn't mind.
Yeah. Your mom doesn't.
I'm sure the Irish are happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
She comes from Luxembourgers who settled in Wisconsin. So
really?
We have a lot of ties to Wisconsin. Yeah.
Oh, so interesting.
My dad's ashes are also in a niche. I mean, there's a lot of ashes, right? So my sister got a hunk, I got a hunk, and then we have a hunk that we put in a niche. So most of my mom is in the niche with my dad. And then I have some that I still haven't figured out what to do with, but I want to do something I think would be meaningful to her. When the pandemic's over and I can, you know, we can move and all that.
Very well said. Lori Kilmartin, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Corset. It's great.
Thank you so much.
Lori Kilmartin is a stand-up comedian and an Emmy-nominated writer. Her latest album is Corset. You can find out more about Lori at wpr.org/beta.
I don't think I'm ever going to have trouble coming up with ideas. I have an excess of ideas. It's really about figuring out which ideas are the ones that you're supposed to engage with.
Coming up, author Jamie Attenberg talks about her memoir, I Came All This Way to Meet You. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.